everybody, and welcome to From the Mezzanine. I'm your host, Lindsay Stone, and let's get into this week's episode. How's everybody doing? It has been a Broadway on week for me because I have seen a Broadway show. Matter of fact, I just got out of the show about an hour and a half ago, and I am here to report it to you guys just immediately thereafter. Isn't that great? So I'm recording a little later than I typically do. It is a Sunday evening, so shout out to my lovely editor, Reed, / boyfriend, who I thank so much for editing this in the very nick of time. But I thought it would be best to record a little bit later so that I could talk to you about the show that I just saw, which was Book of Mormon. Y'all know that I've been like thinking about seeing this show for a while now, especially being in New York now. I had an inkling that this wasn't exactly a family show to bring everybody to, and I was right about that. This show was a freaking fever dream. And if you've seen it, you know what I mean, mainly in the song, Spooky Mormon Hell Dream. Yeah, I've seen things that I never thought my eyes would see. And now I am forever living in a post-Spooky Mormon hell dream life. And I don't know if I'll be okay after this. But what I do know is that I have finally seen The Book of Mormon, a musical that I have been like just hilariously listening to and adoring since I was in high school. The first time I heard I Believe, I thought that I had never heard anything so hilarious in my entire life. And now that I've seen it, like it totally did live up to my expectation. And I've always been like kind of scared of it because I covered Book of Mormon on the podcast. It was in early days of FTM. And it's always been like a show that is so ironic and like everybody knows it's so satirical and so hilarious, but I've never seen it myself. And I've always been kind of scared too because I know how crass and racy it is. And that is not my humor. It's just not. But I have always loved the music and I've always been kind of scared of the story of Book of Mormon just because I knew how dark it was and how offensive it can be. And so, I don't know, I've had like an odd relationship because I absolutely adore the songs, but I've always been like kind of intimidated to go and see it myself. So we finally won the lottery. It was a Sunday matinee performance, which honestly is probably the worst time to go and see like a funny show because matinees, for one, are low energy, not from the performers, from the audience. Like the audience makes it in these really hilarious shows. Like when we saw Shucked, it was a Saturday matinee and that was a pretty good audience, but I can only imagine like the Friday night or Saturday night performances are probably incredible, fun audiences. But where you have good audiences, there's a chance you also might have some over drinking audiences, which also means that it could get a little crazy because people may have had just a little too much to drink. But however, in a funny show, it's really like great when you have just a spot on audience that is catching all of the little funny comedic bits that like your Sunday matinee, all the old folks and us locals aren't going to like connect to quite as much, I guess. I was, because I knew a lot of the music and I had an idea of what the story was, but I was still like feeling like there was going to be some shocks to the show, and there without a doubt definitely were a lot of shocker moments where my mouth was just to the floor and I was like just shocked by what my eyes and my ears were hearing. It definitely like likes to bring in the shock factor. When I was researching Book of Mormon actually for the show, I made myself watch my first episode of South Park. And after like 5 minutes, I felt like I couldn't do it anymore. It is just so offensive. And I'm not saying like I'm personally offended. I'm just saying I don't relate to that humor. I'm just like, this isn't for me, you know, like it's too far out there for me. Like Shucked is my humor. That Shucked, let me represent. I'm wearing the sweatshirt right now. I absolutely love that show. And that was like perfectly spot on for my humor. Peter Pan Goes Wrong, spot on for my humor. Book of Mormon, I like am scared to laugh at some points just because I'm like, did they really just say that? Like, that kind of thing. And so while it may be good for, like, your family and your friends, I don't know that any of my, like, non-theatrical friends, I don't know. I don't know. It's not, like, my show, but I thoroughly enjoyed it and I loved seeing it. But I don't know who the heck I would bring to go and see it just because it is so far out there, especially if you come from like a religious background, because those things like translate to pretty much anything. And even though it's like Mormonism, which is definitely not what I grew up on, it's still like just obscene. It is obscene. It's definitely like an episode of South Park for that matter, because they're just saying the craziest things and they have a lot of like pop culture references. Definitely go see it for yourself if you're interested in Book of Mormon. I think it is for like, you have to have like a humongous sense of humor to go, and you can't have like this pulled back, like, are is everybody in the audience like, okay, like, is everybody on the same page? Like, is anybody getting offended? And I didn't feel like that, but it's also like such an important part of like comedy is like they mean to offend you. Like if they offend you in certain times, it's like they're doing something right to an extent, and it's all satirical. It's all just a farce. There's no one like person in this show that is not made fun of. Everybody is made fun of, which is just wild. So Book of Mormon was fantastic. I'm really glad I went and saw it. But the thing that just rattles my brain, I'm like, how has the show been on for over a decade? It means that there's such a market for it that it's just rolled on and rolled on. And of course, like, it's definitely got the tourist appeal at this point since it has been on for so long and it is such a well-known show. It definitely does bring in those people who are just in New York for the weekend and want to see something that they've heard of. It definitely has that sort of appeal at this point. So yeah, it did surprise me, but I'm absolutely not in like the adult comedy space in terms of like anything Trey Parker and Matt Stone do. Like that is not my space. And that's so obviously like a huge market. Like there's a ton of people who are interested in that kind of humor. And if you don't know, if you didn't listen to my Book of Mormon episode, it is written by the same people who created South Park. So it's very similar. But yeah, I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And we had a really good cast. I loved the guy who played Elder Price. He resembled Andrew Rannells so much to a T. At certain points, it just felt like we were just watching Andrew Rannells, but not even to compare. He was so, so talented and he really embodied the role so well. And his name was Kevin Clay. And apparently he's been playing this role for quite a long time. He did the national tours and now he's on it on Broadway. And then our Elder Cunningham was Cody Jameson Strand. And he was excellent as well. I mean, everybody in the cast was great. It's hard to even like pick a standout because everybody was so crazy hilarious. But if I had to pick a standout, I don't know if I would even know what his name was because he was just in the ensemble, but he was so good. Okay, let me see if I can find him. Oh my gosh, it just says ensemble. So I don't even know which ensemble member that he was. But yeah, he was one of the elders and he was the one who played like the gay one who had really strange feelings for Steve. He was like major standout. Absolutely loved his character and he played it so well. And it's really interesting to see the line of people who have filtered through Book of Mormon. This has been a pivotal show for a lot of the male Broadway guys who are like so well known now. Like Gavin Creel was Book of Mormon, obviously Josh Gad, and who else? Let me think for, oh, Ben Platt. He was actually in Book of Mormon in 2013, just for a short period, I believe in Chicago. But a lot of people have filtered through this cast. It is just the craziest show that I've ever seen, honestly. I don't even know what else could be crazier. It was so wild. And if you've seen it, like, please let me know what you think. I saw children in the audience and I was like, they are gonna have such in-depth conversations with their parents tonight. They do a really good job when you're purchasing the tickets to say that this is an explicit show. But I don't even think anybody could have began to understand what their version of explicit was, because it was some of the most explicit things I've ever heard. And I don't want to go into depth because this is not an explicit podcast, but just beware when you're going, like, go with your girlfriends, go with your boyfriend who's got, you know, a boyish sense of humor. Not that humor is gendered whatsoever, but it's a crazy show. So let's just end it there. And I'm so glad that I finally saw it and I can check that box. I would totally go again because it is so fun. It's just an easygoing show and it goes by really, really fast. Like, it was intermission. I was like, I feel like we've been in a theater for 30 minutes. And you know that that's a good thing. Some of the best shows can even feel really long. I hate to say it, but sometimes Hamilton feels like it's long. Like, we're like, oh my God, we're only at the cabinet battle. Like, sometimes certain shows, even though they're amazing, they can still feel long. And this one flew by just because there's so much going on and the wow factor is constantly hitting you, slapping you across the face. And so, yeah, I would definitely recommend this show if you're wanting to have fun and laugh. But I do feel in a sense that it is a little bit dated. A lot of shows on Broadway that stay on for an extended period of time, especially comedies, can really lose their humor and their comedic appeal if they've been on for a really long time. Because I do feel like certain pieces of comedy are kind of relevant at one point in time, and you have to keep updating the script to make them, like, continue to be hilarious. My biggest example of this was whenever I went to see Phantom of the Opera. It's been on Broadway for forever, and there were moments that were so obvious that they were supposed to be funny, and they just simply were not. And I could hear, like, a few forced laughs, but it's obvious that when it came out, that was probably, like, the most hilarious joke of the time. But now, in our present-day society, it's like, sorry, was that a joke? Like, I didn't even pick up on it. Book of Mormon is not like that. You are going to laugh, and it is very, very funny. But I do like more relevant and updated comedies, personally, just because they can have, like, more relevant deep cuts that are just, like, so relevant, you know, so relevant to the times. But all in all, like, this story is not going out of style because it's still relevant in our current day and age. So yeah, that's my thoughts on Book of Mormon. I'm so glad I was finally able to see it. Let me say real quick though, I was so concerned because, like I said, we won the lucky seat lottery. So in order to be transparent, we paid $50 for our tickets. $50. That is how I'm seeing so much Broadway, guys. If you haven't listened to my ultimate guide to the Broadway lottery system, go back and listen because I give you all the tips and tricks about it. And there is a lot to know and I'm still learning. So lucky seat, I've only done it for, like, national tours. And this was my first time to do it for a Broadway show, and it operated very differently. I actually got my seats ahead of time. When you do it for a national tour, you don't know where you're going to be seated until you show up at the theater to claim your tickets. And so for this one, I found out that we were, like, on the farthest right seat that you possibly could be. And I used this app. I would highly recommend it. It's called A View From My Seat. And it basically, you just type in the theater and you type in where you're seated, and it'll show you pictures of, like, patrons who have gone and taken a picture of what the view is from there. And so it's very helpful if you're trying to figure out where the best place to sit in the theater is. But since we already had our tickets, we didn't have any choice. And people were saying that this was, like, the most horrible viewing experience that they have ever had, but they didn't have any pictures from our precise seats. So I had a feeling that we were, like, not, like, people were saying you weren't able to see half of the stage, and that they can't even believe that they would even sell these tickets. But it turns out that those pictures were for the row right in front of us. And yes, if we were seated there, we wouldn't have been able to see half the stage because you would be blocked by all of the box seats. But luckily, right behind where we had to lean over to our left a few times to be able to see, like, everything. But for the most part, they were incredible seats. And just for $50, it was so worth it. Book of Mormon prices, I don't think they're astronomical, but who wants to pay $150 when you could pay $50, right, to see the same show? And we were in the mezzanine, of course, because of from the mezzanine, but I do love being in the mezzanine. Yeah, they were incredible seats. So I would highly recommend doing Lucky Seat if you are wanting to go and see the Book of Mormon. We had to purchase the tickets, I believe it was, like, 3 days prior to the show. So we had a good amount of time between, like, winning the lottery, buying them, and going and seeing the show. Because some of these lottery systems, it's, like, the day of or, like, the day before you buy the tickets. So anyways, That is it. I was so scared that we were going to have the worst seats in the house, and luckily we had a great viewing experience. Shall we move on? I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to talk to you guys, just chat about a little bit before we get into it. One thing that I kind of did want to talk about is the Rachel Ziegler slander. Ziegler? What did I just say? That sounded like a tongue twister. Rachel Ziegler slander. Oh my God, that's hard to say. That I have been seeing on TikTok. It is crazy. So if you don't know Rachel Ziegler, she was in West Side Story, the Steven Spielberg remake. And she was Maria, which practically made her a huge star and a very big name, especially in the Broadway community. But we've known about her for quite a while. And she's incredibly talented. And she was cast as Snow White in the recent Snow White remake, live action remake. And she is just getting like torn apart on TikTok. Everything that I see, people are making fun of her. What they're making fun of is like, she's doing these interviews where she's really talking poorly against the original Snow White. And she's saying things that aren't exactly true. At least like most of us don't see Snow White as the way that she's explaining. Like she's saying like, oh, the original Snow White was so focused on her love story. She fell in love with this guy who stalks her. And I think all of us pretty much remember from Snow White, the wishing well. I'm wishing for the one I love. And then the seven dwarfs. Like that's what we all like remember about Snow White, you know? Hello. Hi ho, it's off to work we go. And so anyways, she's just like really talking poorly about what it's based off of, and people are not here for it at all. I've always really liked her just because of her talent, but I've always just kind of written her off because she does have a lot of these like bizarre things, and I've always written it off just as she's like a weird theater kid like we all are, let's be honest. And like, Hollywood is not accepting it. Like the greater pop culture folks are not loving her. And it's not going to be good for her press tour or her acceptance as like a Disney princess. It's really bizarre. And so if you didn't know that this was going on, just look it up. I just don't know why she would say such like terrible things for what her new movie is based off of. And of course, they're all comparing her to Halle Bailey in Little Mermaid and how like gracious and polite and gorgeous and sweet and amazing Halle Bailey is. And then they're like, and then Rachel Ziegler is, they're pinning women against women, I guess, at the end of the day. But it's just something I wanted to talk about because it's a little drama going down in the theater community that I've been witnessing as of late. Let's head on in to our Broadway grosses for the week. This is the week ending on August 6th. So we will have the parade. Oh, I'm crying. The parade final performance and where they ranked. Last time, I think I guesstimated that they were going to be like ranked fifth. So let's find out. Number one, we have Lion King. We know. Hamilton is number two, beating out Wicked at number three, with Funny Girl at four, and Parade is at five. Oh my God, I was right. I can't believe it. Parade closed out their run at five. I'm not surprised because those tickets were so expensive, but yay, that makes me so happy for them. That's so good. Like, why did y'all close? Like, bring it back. But also, Funny Girl beating them out to be at fourth, that is really, really high. Funny Girl is going to end their run. I'm calling it now at third, for sure. Funny Girl, whenever it first came out, it was teetering between the fourth and the fifth. And I think they're going to end their run at third. Because I don't think that they can, I don't think they can beat out Hamilton and Lion King. They definitely can't beat out Lion King. It'll be crazy if they beat out Hamilton and Wicked, but I think Funny Girl, I think they can at least beat out either Wicked or Hamilton to be at third in their closing week. But I'm so happy that Parade ended their run on a high note. I knew that they would. I wish so desperately that my cash money was in this week's grossing. I really wish I was able to go see this show one last time. Truly, I'm so sad I wasn't able to, but oh, such a good show, and it's gone, and I don't know if I'll ever recover. Okay, so this all means that Sweeney Todd is at 6, Aladdin is at 7, MJ is at 8, Harry Potter is at 9, and Back to the Future is at 10, meaning Anne Juliet is at 11, and Moulin Rouge is at 12. Since we just spent forever talking about the Book of Mormon, I'll let you know that Book of Mormon is right below there at 13. So these long-running musicals, they're doing fine. But Moulin Rouge, Book of Mormon, Six is right below that. They're really in a great area. They're sustaining themselves pretty well. So that's a fun, wonderful week of Broadway grosses. It just sucks that Parade is gone. I am so sad. Shall we talk about our Broadway news for this week? I want to start off, not exactly a Broadway news story, but guys, the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is happening right now. It started on August 4th, and it will be completed on August 28th. Now, I wish I knew everything there was to know about the Edinburgh Fringe. I wish I had a correspondent there. I wish I was there to be able to go and watch all of these shows, but it is pretty much mind-boggling to even begin to try to cover everything that is happening at the Edinburgh Fringe. Because guys, there is over 3,000 shows performing at this thing. I can't even imagine that. It sounds like a dream come true to me, but that is so many shows. And so I'm seeing so many news stories come out about this is hot, this is doing well, da 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 da. And I don't even know where to start. So if you, I guess, are at the Edinburgh Fringe and you want to tell me about how you're loving it or what shows I need to keep an eye out for, please do, because I would love to stay in the know. But it's like overwhelming. It's all of the stories I see. And I know I've got some Westin listeners out there. And I'm sure y'all are like, Lindsay, please cover the Edinburgh Fringe. It's so huge in the theater community. But I'm trying to grasp it. So I think next week I'm going to do a major deep dive on the history of the Edinburgh Fringe and try to understand some of the hot shows right now that are going on there and like what we think is going to come to Broadway, what we think is going to go to the West End, da da da. I will do my best. And I think I'm going to try and bring that to you guys next week while it is still going on. But for now, I just want to notify you guys, keep an eye out. It's happening as we speak. They said that this is their biggest year ever. They have sold over 1 million tickets, I think they said. And so that's really great for the theater community. I'm glad to see that it is blossoming and doing so well. And over 3,000, I think it's all 3,200 shows are happening at this thing. That's incredible. I can't even begin to understand all that's going on, but it sounds like the mecca of theater, and I would love to go one day. Moving right along to our next news story of the week, we have finally received our casting for Spamalot, or should I say not finally, because everything about this show has just been coming out one thing after another. It has just been like an overflow of all of this news. So James Monroe Eagleheart, yes, the genie from Aladdin. He was in Hamilton. We love this man. He is so talented. He will be playing King Arthur, which is no surprise since he actually played the role at their Kennedy Center performances, which they did off-Broadway tryout. And so he is staying in his same role and bringing it to Broadway. And I literally want to quote Rachel Ziegler right now and say, evidently so. That's what she says in one of her interviews. And that's one of the things that's getting like memed and everybody's making fun of. But evidently so, he is coming to Broadway because we just adore James Monroe Eagleheart. And he is going to be such a good King Arthur. If you have seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail or Spamalot, you know that he's going to be so good in this role. Like, I'm so excited. I can't wait to go and see him finally. And I'm so excited. Okay, we know that Christopher Fitzgerald, who of course originated the role of Bach in Wicked, he was also in Waitress as Ogie. I love Ogie, my favorite character. He originated the role of Ogie in Waitress. He is going to be playing Patsy. Christopher Fitzgerald is a perfect casting. Honestly, I might be more excited about seeing Christopher Fitzgerald in this role. Like, to see the guy who originated Bach, that is groundbreaking. That is so cool. I can't believe that I live in a world where I'm going to get to see the person who originated Bach. Amazing. Leslie Rodriguez Kritzer, who was in Beetlejuice, she will also be coming over from the Kennedy Center cast, and she will be the Lady of the Lake. Now, I don't know much about this role because I don't think that it was in the movie. I don't remember there being any women other than when they went into that fortress with all of the naked women. And then I think there were like sirens and stuff, but I don't think there were any women. So maybe this is just like for representation, but I don't know anything about this role. But I'm excited that it's her because I liked her in Beetlejuice. And then, to everybody's surprise, is Ethan Slater, who we know as Bach and Wicked, who we most recently know as Ariana Grande's boyfriend/not boyfriend, whatever's going on there. He will be playing the historian slash Prince Herbert, who is arguably, other than Patsy, the greatest role in the show. The man who says, "But father, I don't want to something, I want to sing." This role will be played by Ethan Slater, which I honestly cannot see, but maybe if I go to opening night, I'll see him and Ariana Grande together. And that's what I'm hoping for. Additionally, in the cast, we have Jimmy Smagula. He's from Billy Elliot, and he will be Sir Belvedere. We have Michael Urie. He's from Torch Song as Sir Robin. Nick Walker from Hamilton, which my sister informed me that I have seen him in Hamilton before, which I don't exactly remember, but he looks like he would be very good in this role. He will be playing Sir Galahad. And noted, it's important to note that the one big role that we haven't heard who is going to be playing it yet is Sir Lancelot. It is yet to be cast. In the Kennedy Center performance, it was played by Alex Brightman, but he's in He's in The Shark Is Broken right now, which is only on for a limited run, so maybe he can join this cast. But they haven't announced it yet, so I don't think that they're, like, withholding this because it's going to be some, like, gigantic name. I think that they quite honestly just have not casted it yet. So we're waiting to hear who Sir Lancelot will be played by. But this is a dynamite cast, and I am so, so ready for those previews. I'm going to be in those seats, absolutely loving it. I'm so excited. And in my theater marketing business news, Funny Girl announced this past week that they have officially recouped their investments. Round of applause for Funny Girl. Yay, you did it. You're not a flop. I'm like clapping so lightly next to the mic so I'm not making any crazy noises for y'all. But this is a very huge accomplishment, and it's really like not easy to come by. I think most people by now probably know that it is very easy to flop on Broadway, especially when you opened on the tail end of a worldwide pandemic. So for the fact that they had $16.5 million budget, and they were able to recoup their investment with a pretty short run. I mean, they were on for under 2 years, I believe, and they've recouped their investment. That's a huge accomplishment, especially considering the fact that when they started out, they were flopping. They were not looking promising when they had their original Fanny Bryce, played by Beanie Feldstein. They were not nominated for any Tonys. Well, actually, they were nominated for one Tony, for which they did not win. And it was just not being critically acclaimed whatsoever until the dang moment Lea Michele stepped on that stage and she brought this show out of the ashes. She really did. I don't know if I've ever seen a bigger PR campaign for any show ever. Like, once Lea Michele was there, they were like, we know we have our star power now. Let's promote the heck out of it. And that's exactly what they did. And guess what? We found out this week that all of their work paid off. Matter of fact, I saw Lea Michele today. After our show, we were walking around trying to find a good place for dinner. We saw like a huge crowd and I was like, ugh, it's so busy right now because all of these shows let out. And we just so happened to be walking past the August Wilson. And I was like, wait a second, all the shows got out. And I just like started speed walking towards, because I saw a huge crowd out there. And I just started speed walking towards it. And sure enough, Lea Michele was signing playbills. So that was pretty cool. You know, just seeing Lea Michele on a random weekend. It is what it is. No big deal. It's my life. But anyways, yes, good for Funny Girl. I'm glad that they recouped because that's a huge accomplishment. And now they just get to benefit from their hard work and their laborious PR campaign. I hope that marketing team finally gets to sleep at night. All right, you guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode of From the Mezzanine. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please, please, please leave me a 5-star review wherever you're listening right now. I will love you for it. And also share this episode with a musical theater loving friend who you think would love FTM too. You can find all of my social media channels in the show links below. I'm on Instagram and TikTok. You can simply type in From the Mezzanine to find me and I will catch you over there. And I will see you guys again next Tuesday. Bye.